know you like that.
How long you been back, man?
What's going on out there in the wonderful world of New York? Hope you guys are having a great weekend. Some of that noise that you're hearing is coming from that wonderful bag of chips that I picked up. But this is, those who don't know, the AWOL radio show, Walrus Den edition, which is what I do every so often. Kind of like my own personal little journal where I talk to you guys. And you know, it's just me usually on the mic. But today we have our second feature on the show. Carlton.
Hey.
One of the regular voices that you hear on the radio show is on the Walrus Den. So there you go, folks. Be really excited. But yeah, welcome. It's a lovely Saturday. It's August 5th. It's a beautiful summer day out. I'm just returning, actually, from Queens. But first, let me introduce myself. I am the Walrus himself, Michael Powell. What's up out there? Yeah, I'm just returning from Queens. Nice little trip out there to show some love to a friend of mine who's running a bar out there. Anybody who stopped by and visits Queens should check out the bar. It's called Iconic, I-C-O-N-Y-C. It's out on in Astoria, Queens, off of the MR, yeah, off the 46th Street stop is the closest one. But I must also throw in there that I went to a Thai restaurant called Pie Boathouse. It's the name of the place, and it was actually really good.
Yeah, I've actually been craving some Thai food myself here recently, but I just haven't gotten to it.
It was really good. And for $20, I got a Thai iced tea. I got an appetizer of fried pork strips, which was really delicious. And I got pad Thai noodles with beef. Everything was pretty quick. It came out pretty quickly. Nothing took a long time.
10 minutes.
But most importantly, it was delicious. The beef was tender. I mean, which is rare.
Right. It's not like your local carryout beef and broccoli type of stuff. Yeah, that's why I like Thai food.
It was super tender. And yeah, I mean, the overall meal was really amazing. It was delicious. And I paid like 19 something. Really good price for that experience.
Vegetable, like garnish. Garnishments on the side.
And the pad thai had a celery pieces in it, or some type of vegetable that's a watercress type of vegetable, and it was really delicious, and it added to the flavor completely. And I've never had it before in my pad thai, so it definitely added a different spin to it. So you know, anybody out there, there's a location here in the city in Manhattan that that you can check out. So definitely check them out. But that's my week weekend. I'm sure you guys had an equally awesome weekend. Carlton's weekend involved working, so he's
CPR training.
Nothing exciting. How does it feel? 7 o'clock
in the morning.
Breathing life into a half-bodied dummy.
Actually, I'm not even gonna lie. This was like crash course CPR training. Basically, just so you know, the company could say that they did it, but we really didn't even, they didn't even provide us with the masks that you do use to blow the breath in, but we went through that process, and we actually did have the dummy, and we went through the whole
the chest,
and all of that good stuff. Ironically, there was a lot of joking during the thing, but one person did bring up the thing, because they said that you, for an adult, you have to compressed 2 inches. And honestly, he said 2.8 inches is the level of compression, which to me sounds kind of crazy. So somebody did ask, they were like, well, isn't that kind of like rough or hard to do? And then the instructor was like, well, I'd rather crack some ribs and have you, your heart beating, versus not have your heart beating and you're dying. But ironically, one of the dummies, actually the breastplate fell off of it.
Ah, see, that shows you. You know, so, I mean, well, So my understanding, when you're doing CPR, you do risk breaking ribs and physically causing injury to the person. Mm-hmm. But it's for the purpose of them surviving. Right. I mean, I think anybody would be still be grateful, even though they had some cracked ribs.
Right. And then still honestly, breathing. The CPR is just a not a preventative measure, but a preliminary measure until an AED is administered, basically gives the electric shock, which is the equivalent of the CPR process anyway. Yeah. So,
yeah.
I mean, it was cool. It was just longer than expected. And then a lot of the folks, it's kind of funny to see how grown people act in like that type of setting. Because of like half the class, at certain points, we would take our little breaks, wouldn't come back on time and all types of craziness. Like, yo, just come in here and bang this mess out. Like, what are y'all doing? Like,
yeah, I mean, you're going to go home after this anyway, right. So why are you prolonging
it? Right. And then you got, what? We got five and a half hours of free money, basically?
Basically, yeah. Right. To sit around and listen to somebody tell you how to bring life to a dummy.
Right, and then give us a certification on something that we really didn't even do.
You're rarely ever going to use that, but yeah. Yeah, and you get paid for it.
Right.
Yeah, it's pretty silly.
That's
how people are. So now, last show, which did not record well, that's my fault out there, folks. Those who are looking for a new AWOL radio show episode, we had one recorded, actually, and whatever I used to record did not go as well as it should have, so it did not come through correctly. So that show does not exist. So we're going to kind of do a semi-War's Den version of that show. And the show's topic was interracial dating. And we kind of did like a preliminary introduction, if you will, talking about O.J. Simpson, who clearly killed his white wife, who was cheating on him with a white man. It's interesting. Or whatever that was, because he got the probation sentence recently.
If it doesn't fit, you must have quit.
Yeah, I mean, but he still did time eventually for like 9 years.
But that was for a totally different crime.
Stealing his own stuff. Right. And then we talked about Kanye West. And we also talked about Jesse Williams, who blew up, who became very well known or recognized for his speech that he gave for the BET Awards last year, but then ended up cheating on his black wife with his white co-worker. White co-star. But it's still a co-worker. I don't know why they need to call them co-stars. Well, only one of you is the actual star. Because, I mean, let's be real. He's the actual guy that we know. I mean, no one really knows her. But anyways, whatever. He ended up cheating on his black wife, who he's been with for about 7 years or something like that. And he met her when he was still a teacher, a history teacher.
Right.
And he was still trying to get his acting career up on the rise. And she was a huge real estate mogul, not mogul, but was working for a large company that was well known, called Harris Stevens, or Stephen Harris, I think is the name of the company. You can definitely find them here in the city, because they own some of the most well-known and expensive condos and co-ops, but I'm thinking mostly condos here in the city, mostly on Fifth Avenue, which is clear indication of how much it costs to own them. So she was working for them, actually. And then, you know, he was giving her so much praise just literally 8 months ago. Saying that, you know, she stuck by him through the thick and the thin. And when he got thicker, because, you know, he's being very poetic with his words, saying that, you know, even when it got thicker, she stuck around, and then trying to show how much he appreciates her sticking around, only to leave her for this white co-worker. And this is also the same gentleman who was talking about black women needing to be treated with more respect, and how black men
are gonna
need
better.
To show them that, right. And, you know, do better by them, and how they make sacrifices for them to be successful, for black men to be successful.
As she did.
I mean, he was basically talking about her in that speech that he gave, but then he leaves her for this white woman. So we came up with a really interesting thought about just interracial dating. And the whole conversation was about interracial dating. And, you know, honestly, I think there's definitely many different ideas about it. There's some who do it simply because it's exotic. You know, they date the Dominicans, the Puerto Ricans, the white, and not just the white American, but the white European, and find that exotic appeal, and even marry them because of this exotic appeal and the prospect of their children being this mixed race. And then there's some who do it for status, who do it because it reflects a level of societal achievement, depending on who you're dating and who you've committed to, in essence. But we were talking about this just because in this day and age, as it's becoming more and more relevant and more clear, that there's a clear level of distinction and misunderstanding, I guess, in a sense, about what it means and how it affects cultures down the line when you interracial date. And then I don't want people to get confused. I think interracial dating is amazing, to be honest, because I've dated many ethnicities in my lifetime and in my 30-odd years on this planet, and I've been fortunate to experience them. But I think just because of the situation that we in, because to be honest, I mean, I look at Puerto Rican cultures, I look at Dominican cultures, Asian cultures. Mm-hmm. I don't think any of them are as lacking or suffering or as restricted or beat upon, if you will, just to say simply, as our culture.
Well, now I'll say this though.
Yes.
The Black culture, and I think this has something to do with just us being here in America, but Black folks date outside their race statistically more than
more
any other race.
Yeah.
To me, that there's a psychological part to that.
Yeah, clearly.
And especially that goes back to what you said as far as the status, and a lot of times when you date outside your race, like I said, there's an exotic aspect to it.
Of course.
But then there's also, like, in certain situations, that status level. Going back to OJ, he had two children with a Black woman. As soon as he got big and on that level,
he gets put in jail. He loses everything he had. Mm-hmm. I mean, he should be an example for all Black men. That if you're dating a Black woman initially, do not leave her for anything other than a Black woman. I mean, if you're going to leave her because things aren't working out, then that's fine. I mean, you totally should.
Right.
I mean, things aren't working out. But don't leave her for the, you know, for the fair-skinned, you know, lady. You know, you don't do that. And then also, I mean, my thing has been, I mean, and I don't know about you, Carlton, but, you know, again, I've dated Puerto Rican, Dominican, whatever. I mean, honestly, I've not dated many Black women up until now. I've not dated many at all. I've been very much into the Latinas or to the, you know, not white American, but like the European whites, the Eastern European, Russian, Italian.
I have a certain life for the Eastern Europeans myself. I've told you about that.
But, so just, I mean, that's just to say that I'm not against interracial dating, because I'm not. I think there's multiple things that you can gain from it if it's not just learning other cultures and understanding them in a more intimate sense than you would if you just were friends or tourists, or if you're doing it for the understanding of self or, you know, self-development, whatever the case is. Because to be honest, because black men and Black women are taught to think of each other in negative senses, like that's our constant reiteration. Dating outside of that race allows for you to see yourself in a better light. But my thing has always been that it's because we're, and you know, maybe you disagree, but because we're constantly put into a position of disadvantage, especially if you're like a Black child, purely Black child, it is almost like our duty, and I've started to think like this when I was in my early 20s, that it's our duty as a ethnicity of color, as Asians do, or as, you know, Puerto Ricans do, as Dominicans do, as Italians do, as anybody else who's not white American, does, where they'll go out and date black or whatever else, and it's kind of like a test for them just to kind of have fun, experience. But when they're ready to settle down,
they settle down with their own.
And, right. and my thing has always been that because African Americans are have been in a position of less than, and have allowed other people to tell us our value.
Mm-hmm.
It's our duty as a culture to continue to create generations that are built in the opposite direction, where we as come from a generation of racism, you know, you're a monkey, you're this, something that degrades us, even to the generation now that's dealing with hip hop music that degrades women and basically looks like a buffoonery on every major network. Like, that's basically what it feels like and sounds like. It's our duty to start to create a new image, you know. And there's something to be said about seeing a black man and a black woman married,
right, and together
for a
long period of time,
yes, with children, and not just together, but supporting each other.
Right.
I think that has been one of the most beautiful things to witness, is when a black woman and a black man, even if it's just every day, black woman, black man, not like the Obamas,
right,
or the Beyoncé's.
Honestly, the everyday black woman and man, to me, is the better example, mm-hmm, not those particular examples. Mm-hmm. Because all you see in the everyday black relationship experience is dysfunction.
Yes.
So when you see that happening, and it's good, and it works for an mm-hmm extended period of time, that is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, seriously. And you know, and I've always felt that that's been our kind of duty to, I guess you could say, basically date within our, settle down within our race. Race doesn't, right, mean date within our race exclusively. I don't agree with that. I think as a person, to continue to grow as a person, you should experiment and expand your horizons, if you will, outside of that box. But I think when it comes down to settle down, someone who you can build this strong structure to, and not just build, but understand that you're leaving something, excuse me, that's, you know, something behind.
Right. And I was actually gonna, because you talked about the children and leaving something behind, I was gonna bring up this topic, but the whole biracial child. Now, of course, it's not their reasoning. They're not here on their own doing, mm-hmm, but they have to live in a world that we know is racist.
Yes.
And a lot of those children tend not to fit into like either category.
Mm-hmm.
So as the parents of a biracial child,
how do you address that?
How do you address that? Do you even think about what your next generation will have to do? Or was it just you as this black man, this white woman, this vice versa, what have you? Was it just y'all just coming together and like, hey, I like this Dominican woman? And that one is a little bit, okay, blacks and Dominicans, we kind of like, it's a little easy.
Close, actually.
But at the same time, and I not to make it that black and white, but yes, the black and white thing, because that's the biggest divide in this country.
Mm-hmm.
When those people come together and make that child, were they thinking about what that child would have to go through in the future?
And that's a good point that you bring up, because I don't think many people do think about.
No, it's really like a lustful, what they're leaving behind situation.
Because I mean, you're gonna die,
right?
And you've created another being that's basically based off of you and this other person.
It is you. And
what are you showing? You know, whenever people, for instance, are dating and then decide to marry partners that, one, don't fully value or understand their culture,
right?
Have a family,
their spouse,
that hates their culture, that's always been against it. Why are you going to bring a kid into that?
Right,
a kid that has no understanding of why their grandmother doesn't want to, you know, fully touch them or right, deal with them, or why their cousin? Because I mean, I think people forget. Yes, your sisters, your aunts, uncles, you know, your mom, dad may not say anything to this kid. But you forget that these people have kids.
Right.
Those kids are going to replicate and repeat whatever it is that their parents have said about
colored people or people who are this or this. Right. I mean, this is reality. Right. Those kids are the ones that are going to turn around and say, oh, well, you know, you're this, or you're not, you know, you're that. And they don't think about that because they're only thinking about them and then how their adults, you know, have come to receive this. But they're not considering that there's other beings being made that are not adults that don't see that and are going to duplicate, copy what they're being told, what is right and wrong, what is appropriate, what is, like, you know, what is okay. And your child now is being exposed to that. How do you handle that? How do you address that?
To that point, I was reading an article about a half black, half Jewish woman. And up until she went to college, she always identified as being white. But then the white Jewish side of her family, would she would always be the darker portion of those pictures and all of that. So then when she went to, she applied for college.
She was black.
Well, no, they asked for a picture of her, right? And the college classified her as black.
That's interesting.
And then she went along with that. And at that point, up until that point, she really had no real dealings in black culture and all that other stuff. So then that was like a total culture shock for her. But that's what I'm saying. Like, she basically identified as a white woman up until she went to college. Or a white person up until she went to
that's
college.
That's so interesting, yeah.
But that's the crazy mix-up that I'm thinking of. Like, trust me, I've probably said this to you before, but I've thought about, I wanted, like, a child with a black woman. I wanted a child with a Spanish woman. I wanted a child with, like, a Russian woman. And
to see what I mean, how they fit into to the societal structure.
Well, not only that, but I just wanted, like, it is a selfish thing. It is a selfish thing to an extent, but I wanted to see how myself would be shown in those different categories. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, that's completely selfish. That's
not... Yeah, it is. I've had those thoughts. I'm not saying, of course, I haven't acted on that yet because I don't have any children.
We don't know that. I mean,
but I'm saying, like, no, I don't have any children. But at this point now, and I guess this is selfish too, I always have in my head now, I'm like, well, I wish I was darker skinned. So now I want to get black. What's the actor or actress's name that Kodak, not Kodak Black, but Gilbert Arenas says was ugly or something like that?
Oh, you mean, what's her name? Njungo or something?
She's African.
She's straight African. Yeah.
Fucking love her skin tone, y'all. I love it. That black. That's what I'm looking for. Well,
but why? Why do you want that?
Because I want my next generation to be darker skin. I just like dark skin. I do. I wish I was darker. That's just the way I like. I like it.
Okay. I mean
that's just like how you've heard other people say, Caucasians, if you will, that they want brown babies.
Yeah. We're not going to talk about what I heard, but you know, I have heard this said to me to my face. And I was kind of shocked. But, you know, I mean, also, I mean, this is going off topic, but I think it's still, I guess, relevant or relative to the topic in a sense. But it's still dealing with black and white. I've noticed that younger white people, not the older white people, but a lot of younger people. And that means, and when I say young folks, I mean like in their 20s, early 30s. Mm. They want to be cool with black people, like hardcore cool, to the point where they start talking in slang.
Yeah.
They start talking in ways that
I don't like that.
Normally, you can tell that they don't.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. Like, when I hear that,
I don't talk like that.
Right, so I don't talk like that to that extent either. So when I hear that from them, it makes me think that they're being condescending. And
matter of fact, I had a coworker this week send me an email where his initial opening of the email was, yo. And he's never done that before. Well, never done that before. Well, he emails me all the time. He's never. Well,
I told you how at my previous job, the head of the daggone the facility was addressing me as "yo dog."
Yeah, I mean that's 40, even worse. 40
middle-aged white man talking to a totally called "yo dog."
No, even though he's on the block, they'll say "yo dog."
Right, you don't talk that way. So no, what are you
but you're talking to me like that. Yeah, right.
And it's not weird. Cool.
It was kind of weird. I had to pause a moment when I read his email because I mean, I know the guy.
Right.
I've been working at this place for a couple of years, but it still threw me because out of almost two years,
he doesn't speak that way to you.
He's never spoken like that.
And that's nature. You write and consequently type the way that you speak.
He's never said, yo, mind you, folks, I listen to some of the most ratchet music.
Yes, you do.
And I can talk in Thugonomics, if you will, whatever you want to call it, Ebonics, whatever the hell you call it. Sure. I can talk that. I talk it good part fluidly. Of the time when I'm on the weekends, particularly. When I'm around the people that I chill with, it'll come out.
You're talking fluent Ebonics.
But never
fluent
have ratchetness. I emailed anybody saying, yo, as the first thing. That's kind of threw me because I would never do that.
Yeah, me neither.
Never. Especially I wouldn't even assume that you're cool. Even to another black person.
Right, not in the workplace.
In the office.
Right.
Now I would never do that.
What was the context of this email? What was he speaking
about? He was asking me.
No, was it something work related?
Yeah, it was work related.
So nah, he's definitely not supposed to do that. Do it like that.
What?
And he's never addressed you like that.
Ever. Ever. Yeah, that's 2 years. He's never said yo.
I would have had to like maybe call him on it. Like, what do you mean, yo? Like,
I mean, I was a little thrown. And I was like, you know what? Just going to let this one go. It's the first time in 2 years. That's a long time. I'm going to rock.
Right.
Because, you know, this is new. Now, the next thing he's like, yo. This chick was asking me to do X, Y, Z. Then I'm going to be like, we're not buddies, first of all. And secondly, this ain't my phone. You know, so speaking of phones, if I may say, and this is kind of like a sidetrack, bro, so forgive me. I have been out in Queens at Iconic. Again, go to Iconic, great bar, amazing beers. But speaking of phones, I don't like people from work calling me on my phones. I mean, on my cell phone. Uh-huh. I hate that. It actually pisses me off. You know, doing what I do, I have a lot of vendors who call me on that phone. Even my bosses, if they call me on that phone because they don't get me on the office phone, it aggravates me. And I kind of call them on it and be like,
don't call me
on it's my phone. Phone. Yeah, like, why are you... You know, sometimes I'm like, I want an answer. And I know it's them. It's like, I just want to pick it up. And I feel like the thing is for me, and I don't know if this is like a black thing or just, you know, not wanting to conform to BS. No, right. Just not wanting to be conformed to BS thing.
Oh, well, yeah.
My thing is that some of the people that I work with, their phones, almost everybody in that office, I think almost everybody in that office, practically, I think I'm the only one who does not have this. Their phones are paid for. Their bills are paid for by I don't want to. No, I mean, why am I paying? I mean, why are you calling me on my phone?
Right, if that's the case, they might as well give you a work phone.
Seriously.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, you must just give me the goddamn pay for my bill.
Right.
But if I choose to not answer, you can't say anything to me. It's my phone.
Right.
It's my bill.
Right.
If I quit this job today or you fire me, I still have this bill. I've had this phone for years. I had this number for years. It has nothing to do with you. So if I don't want to answer it, I don't have to answer it. So sometimes when my boss calls me, like if I'm working from home and he wants to talk to me about something, sometimes I don't want to answer. And I've thought about it. Sometimes I've thought about just being like, I don't want to pick up the phone. I don't feel like talking. If I don't pick up the phone for my grandmother or people who I value on a personal level who call me, I should have the option to not pick it up for you either.
Right.
Yeah. I'll email you.
Right.
Hit me up with an email. I'm going to respond immediately. But I don't want to talk to you on the phone. I don't want to hear your voice on my phone. And I don't think that that's wrong. I think you don't own me. And that's kind of where I have an issue with this, the build of corporate America. It's like this thing that you're owned by them. You know what I mean?
Slavery is the oldest type of industry. Realistically, that's what a job is.
No, it totally is slavery because what it is. You know, because they never pay you the value of your time because they can't pay you the value of your time. It's impossible.
Right, because they're trying to bring in more revenue for the corporation or that company. And at the same time, you literally sign papers conforming to that structure. So when you're there for your 8 to 12 or however many hours you work, you're there under the auspices of what they want you to do. And if you don't do it, then they can, release you, fire you, which in American slavery terms is like the whipping or the cast or even the
it also is a devaluing.
Yeah, exactly.
Because when people find out that you've been fired, you have a stigma.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Definitely.
No one is like, why did they fire you?
Right.
And then if they fired you because of you,
of course the rumors, it's even worse. Of course, the rumors go around. The rumor mill goes around the office or the workplace or whatever.
Or the employer could be lying.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that gets me. It's like, you don't know if they're lying. You don't know that.
Nah.
Employer could easily be like, why did we fire him? No, you could have been fired because you chose to not do something because the supervisor was wrong.
Right.
And they just didn't side with you. They side with the supervisor. Right. Whatever. But the employer could easily just be like, yeah, they were, insubordinate.
Right. And I've had jobs with it that they've actually said that they can fire you with no cause.
Yes, I've had jobs like that too. Fortunately, I've never been fired from said jobs.
Right.
But the fact that they have so much power to release you.
Right.
And you could have done nothing wrong. And just be like, you know what? I wish relationships were like that. Relationships are not like that.
Well, I mean, just because there's an emotional aspect.
That's true.
That is true. And now a lot of the emotional aspect in the workplace is very fake.
Well, what it always has been. You can never tell someone that cares about you.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Listen to you, it's not about you. It's about
what's
affecting you that's going to keep you from performing at the highest level.
Exactly.
What can I do to talk to you to make you feel better so you can perform? I mean, that's really what it is. They don't give a shit. Crap about you. Your mother died. Oh man, that's so sad. Do you need a couple of days off? Because the idea is like, I give you these couple of days off.
Right. When you come back
100% better.
Be back.
It's not about it has nothing to do because of caring or wanting you to be a better person.
But now at the same time, I will say this, and like I told you with my last situation, they actually put me on with jobs, and I was right back on it, having missed a beat. You know what I'm saying? I literally got my last check from them, and then had another check from the next job.
Oh wow! Yeah, so you're on point immediately.
Right. So you will get certain situations, certain individuals who do give a damn. And I guess to tie this into the interracial thing, the HR person at that particular job was a white woman. And my direct supervisor was a Puerto Rican woman.
She liked that chocolate, boy.
She actually did.
They liked them chocolate bars.
But yeah, sometimes you will get that level of real emotional, real caring from people in the world.
Yeah, I mean,
but the ultimate structure.
It does happen, but
it's
not
often. Ultimate structure is really bottom line. You better produce or you get your
life. I mean, you're a tool.
Exactly.
So whenever you buy a tool, you don't really care about how it was made, who made it.
Yeah, you want it to work.
Was it the wrong metal that they're using it? No, you want to know, if I put you to this screw, to this screw, to this bolt, are you going to get it off? If not, then I'm getting rid of you. I don't want to sit there and care about what happened. I don't care why you're like this. I just want to know, from this point on, are you going to do what I need you to do?
Right.
And I think, and that structure is what's really got things so backwards right now, and I think having more emotion into the structure of things allows for there to be a better worker. I think because you're showing a genuine level of concern, because people have, it's been proven that you genuinely show that you care.
They will literally
people want to do better for you because you've shown a level of care that they want to kind of reciprocate in how they perform.
To that point, Have you ever seen the BMF documentary on Netflix?
It's a great documentary. If you haven't seen it, folks, check it out. It's on Netflix right now.
Big Meech.
It's a real thing.
Right.
And there's some rappers right now. I won't name any names, but there's some rappers right now that are still down with BMF. BMF, even though Big Meech is serving like multiple years.
Right. But I brought that up because in that documentary, they actually laid out, and I never heard of any crime organization really doing this. Even the mob would even like discard some people, Italian mob. But they actually had a stipend for the families of certain individuals that would go to prison. And they actually showed one of the books where one family was given like over $70,000 a year while their person
was supporting them.
Right.
And now they're in jail. And so they're getting supported.
They're getting supported.
And ultimately, I mean, I'm not a hoodlum. I don't deal in them dealings. But I would assume, ultimately, you want to think that if you have a child and a lady that you can, you know, care about, that you've been, you know, showing the finer things to. If you get locked up for the thing that you've been out there banging for and selling for, that they got her.
You know,
that they're going to look out for her because you put in time and you put in work and you've earned that.
Right. And now, if you go to the Goodfellas movie, which was a pretty accurate portrayal of, I want to say, the Bonanno crime family. Mm-hmm. There was a part where the wife went to, you know, the part when he went to De Niro, and they was basically trying to see what he was possibly gonna say to the feds and all that stuff. And De Niro tells her to go down the street to where he got the Dior dresses. It's about to whack her.
Yeah, Zach was the killer.
But in essence,
and then little Joe Pesci's character like pulled your coat.
Pesci's character was dead at that point. I'm talking about Ray Liotta's wife. But even when Ray Liotta was in the pen and she would come smuggle the stuff into him, she was like, yo, nobody's helping us.
Yeah, I remember that.
I understand the aspect of, we don't want to be involved with felons while these dudes, like the big boys, is up and all that other stuff, but like you said, Big Meech and them actually had money set aside
for that.
For families.
You're making millions upon millions of dollars. And these people who work for you are why you're making millions and millions. I mean, let's be realistic. You're only making millions upon millions because these people are out there risking their lives and their time to sell your drugs and do whatever it is that they're doing to bring it back to you.
Right.
Then for you to decide how much they get. I mean, let's be realistic. You should probably put some money aside. Like, look, you know, I'm not giving you health benefits and all this. So, something goes down, I got you.
I always had this like crazy idea. If I was like some kind of crazy kingpin, drug kingpin, and I was running like a certain area, I would have the fiends like literally cleaning the streets and cleaning the community and pay them for that.
Give them back to
you
pay them in drugs and that's it.
No, not even pay them in drugs. I'll pay them in money
because they're gonna give them back to you anyway. Yeah,
they're helping to keep the community look nice. Like,
I don't want to say it's a good idea because
it's a good idea.
Destroying the communities, or
but
or
they're just helping to keep the community nice.
Well, you're destroying the people who live in the community. The fiends are the people who live in the community.
Not all drug addicts are destructive people.
Well,
we did get off a topic of
we completely got off a topic of interracial dating, and unfortunately, folks, I super apologize, but I am starving right now. It's time for me to eat. Carlton has this wonderful sandwich that he bought from Jersey, you know, where they make real sandwiches, which means that the hero is the size of a table, and that's what you're paying $10 for.
And
so you're getting real food.
Just to tie that back into the interracial dating thing, the girl, it's a little Italian girl that works in that spot, man. She about my height, built, man. She's pretty as hell in the face, man. She gotta be like even late teen, like 18, 19, but maybe she's like early 20s. This girl is bad, man. This girl is bad. I can't even lie. Okay. Like, she's bad.
What are you getting at over here?
I'm just basically, like I said, tying that into the interracial thing. Because
basically what he's saying is that in about a year, he's going to have a baby by an 18-year-old girl.
No.
And she's going to be Italian. No. His baby's going to be mixed. And nah. That's going to be the start of his tribe.
When I do decide to have a child, I mean, granted, she's going to be younger than me, definitely. Like, maybe 20s, mid-20s. Yeah. That age range when the women are, like, really, like, I need a baby type of thing. But, I'm sticking with my black women, my black queens.
Well, it is time for me to skip out, folks.
Eat this food, man.
Yeah, we're about to chow down and watch a few things on Netflix. I will say that some things to check out on Netflix are, one, Castlevania. Great animated show on Netflix.
Is it based on a video game?
Yes, actually. Yeah, but it's actually a good show. It's a good program. I've been peeping something called Glow. Which is on Netflix. It's a series about women who wrestle. It's a fictional series, but it looks pretty interesting. So I'll be checking that. But yeah, this is a really brief War's Den show, folks. I hope you guys have a great remainder of the weekend. Whenever you're listening to this, I hope you have a great week at that point. And we're going to skip out. But And until then, you be well.
Peace.